This podcast was recorded Thursday, February 27th at 11:14 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this.
Yeah, like playing with guns while drunk will be a great idea.
Yeah, what could go wrong? Let's talk politics.
This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those shrewd politicians or snollygosters. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. For anyone confused by the intro, the Ohio Supreme Court this week heard arguments over whether a state law banning intoxicated people from carrying a firearm is constitutional. There's some interesting legal nuance at play here, but can we all just agree that you should put the guns away if you've had too much to drink?
Obviously not, since it was before the Supreme Court. Obviously not, but maybe one day. Stay tuned. Coming up in the podcast, still our first gauge of Ohio voter enthusiasm. But first, we knew it was coming at some point. We just didn't think it would be this soon. Another campaign to legalize recreational marijuana in Ohio is ready to launch.
As first reported by the Cincinnati Inquirer, a new coalition wants to put a proposed amendment on this fall's ballot. This fall, just 8 months from now, the coalition includes several Ohio medical marijuana growers.
You may recall that we've been down this road before. Ohio voters rejected a recreational pot amendment in 2015. The so-called Responsible Ohio Plan would have limited Ohio's marijuana industry to just a handful of companies. Soon after that loss, advocates started planning for a medical marijuana ballot question. Lawmakers seeing, or more likely honestly fearing, that it would likely pass, legalized medical pot themselves. The system now in place, still not fully functional.
Joining us to discuss this is probably Ohio's premier pot correspondent.
What Jackie, a title.
Jackie Borchard from the Cincinnati Inquirer. She wrote the story this week. Jackie, welcome to Snollygoster.
Thanks for having me.
Did you imagine that title during journalism school?
I did not. Although when I first started covering marijuana about 5 years ago now, someone on the internet coined the nickname Lil Doobie. So
that's your
premier pot correspondent is a step up in the world.
That's your Twitter handle now?
My secret Twitter handle.
That's right. Well, it's like that mascot they had during that campaign.
Oh, Buddy. Yeah, Buddy, the pot bud.
So maybe Buddy will make a return.
I doubt we will ever see Buddy
What's
again.
The best PR?
All right, well, maybe not Buddy, but this could be on the ballot. This, Jackie, is a surprise, no?
A little bit. You know, we're kind of in this time frame now where to get on the ballot in November this year, it's going to be a huge lift. So it's not impossible. And I was actually just last night looking at the 100 or so ballot initiatives that have been proposed in the last decade, because that's what I do for fun at night, and realized that actually quite a few are not approved by the Attorney General, and that's the very first step in the process, until mid or late March or sometimes even April. And the difference in being able to get that on the ballot and not really comes down to money.
Yeah.
And that's the big question mark that is not answered yet with this initiative is, do they have the money and organization to get basically 450,000 signatures, more than that, because of some will fail, before July 1st. And of course, there's steps along the way that they will have to pass, but that they need to plan for that.
Who's behind this?
That's a great question. So sources have told me that a couple medical marijuana businesses within the state are supporting it, and that there are others that support it. A wide-ranging coalition is what someone told me. But they have declined to give more details about who's behind the campaign until they actually file the language with the Attorney General, which is the first step. And they plan to do that at the end of this week.
Presumably people with at least slightly deep pockets, right, if they're big in the medical pot industry?
You'd hope so.
You'd
think so. Although, part of this is probably being driven by the fact that Ohio's medical marijuana program has not really met projections, both that businesses have had internally, and then also when you look at other states' programs like Pennsylvania, I typically use as a good foil for Ohio because they got started around the same time as us. They have similar regulations. Their program has similar conditions. And their first year You know, way more than Ohio. Ohio sold, I think, like $60.6 million in its first year, and Pennsylvania was twice that amount, more than twice that amount. So, you know, these businesses have put millions of dollars into brand new, huge, state-of-the-art facilities that meet hundreds of rules and regulations pertaining to security, air control. I mean, they're very complicated arrangements to meet these strict rules and requirements. And based on the first year sales, there no one made money last year.
Yeah, it's been a slow. Not all the dispensaries are open. Still, what, 20% or so are still not licensed yet. It's a pretty high number.
I think we're up now to 48 okay. that have been okayed to open. But really, only in the second half of 2019 did we see kind of what people thought the market should have been like on day one.
And we have 60 total coming, right? So 48 of 60.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they could do up to 60. Yeah. They issued 56, and then they gave a 57th to someone who had won a court battle.
Yep.
But so, you know, I can see that this may be, you know, prompted in part of that. They may see this as a way to expand their market and actually start recouping their investment and then maybe even making money. And as we've seen in other states that have legalized recreational use and sales, they've had medical first and kind of seen that, okay, medical seems to be working out all right. And in a lot of these states, the policy has been to let the existing medical operators be among the first or the first to sell on the recreational side.
Makes sense.
A reason that Ohio's medical pot program was so slow to get going was that it's, you know, like many others, is really mired in rules. It was a lot of legalese at play here. Do we have any idea what that would be for this recreational pot proposal? I mean, as far as where these places would go, how many could be in an individual township or anything like that?
So I've seen a draft and from someone who saw it out in the wild and then passed it along to me because they knew I'd be interested. And what they've proposed according to this draft I've seen is that the existing businesses would be allowed to sell recreational marijuana in July of next year, and then the Department of Commerce would have the authority to regulate the recreational industry. They currently do some parts of the medical program, the cultivators, the testing labs, and the processors. So it's kind of modeled on letting commerce kind of do what they've done with medical marijuana with rules and regulations for recreational. It does allow municipalities to decide whether they want recreational marijuana in their communities. They are allowed, according to the draft I saw, they would be allowed to set hours and times. They would be allowed to zone the businesses in certain parts of the city. So there's a lot of flexibility on the local side of things mm-hmm. to block them or restrict them. They could even get fees from them.
There we go. Well, that's the you see the states that have legalized marijuana, the cities and towns can really rake it in, especially at the beginning when it's new and you see the long lines. And I mean, some cities will bring in hundreds of thousands of dollars in the first couple of months.
Well, and that's what they're seeing in Illinois. I mean, Illinois has really, and they did that where they transitioned their existing medical businesses. Many of them got set up and arranged so that they could sell recreationally on day one. And, you know, they sold nearly $40 million worth in the first month alone. And that's, you know, Ohio sold $60.6 million in a whole year.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think looking at those numbers, that's where you see businesses saying, well, maybe we should do this. Maybe now's the right time. Some other states, you know, Illinois, we mentioned Michigan began sales. And, of course, you know, Michigan is not that far away.
No.
And there are quite a few tourists and medical patients, frankly, in Ohio who, are you know, don't like the products or the prices here, and they're driving to Michigan.
The last ballot initiative failed largely because it was seen as a monopoly or an oligarchy. It was very few companies, relative few companies, were going to control the whole market. Is that something that we'll not see in this one if it gets on the ballot?
Well, the way I understand it is that the state could issue more licenses. It's just that they would get existing businesses would have like the first day and they're set up to do so. And then it would be after, you know, the regulations are set up that they would issue licenses competitively, kind of like as they they did before. And they would also be allowed to limit the number of licenses, but the amendment, I don't think, will set a specific limit. What it does say, though, is that for the first 5 years of sales, it does put a limit on the number of dispensaries or, you know, retail storefronts to no more than one for 60,000 residents, I mm-hmm. believe is what it is. So that's about 200 across the state, which, you know, we have less than about 50 right now. That's certainly a much smaller number than some other states have, but it's also a much larger number than other states, Michigan, Illinois, these states that we keep talking about.
The public opinion on this is really changing, especially with more and more neighboring states adopting this. There's more market share to be gained here. There was a Gallup poll last fall. 66% of Americans support legalizing recreational marijuana. 76% of Democrats favor it. 51% of Republicans. Is that the sense you get reporting on this issue? Is that, you know, there's a sizable, maybe not huge, but pretty fairly large majority that support this?
I don't know. I would like to see Ohio-specific numbers. We haven't seen those in a while. I think the most recent Ohio numbers were something like 52% overall support, which is like, yeah,
probably
it's a majority, right?
And that's what margin of error, though.
Well, yeah, and that's what you need for a ballot, a constitutional amendment to pass on the ballot. But that's then the general question of, do you support this idea? Once you get a detailed proposal out mm-hmm. with, you know, details that people actually can kind of grasp how it's going to look, and there's things they like, there's things they don't like.
Opponents will
find one or more things about this proposal to blow up and add confusion. And when voters are confused or they don't like something strong enough, they'll vote no. I do think what the polling shows is that attitudes are changing very quickly over time. And it kind of mirrors the same-sex marriage debate and how quickly public opinion is changing. And really, yeah, I think it is tied to the states kind of being these laboratories of this policy experiment and people seeing it firsthand. And then I think the other thing that the polling shows us is it's not an R or D issue. It is really a nonpartisan, across the political spectrum, people support it or they don't. It's not necessarily going to drive, you know, I saw someone the other day say, oh, well, this is going to drive traffic for Democrats in the fall. And I don't know that that's the case, because yeah. It's really not. I mean, even some of the Democratic presidential candidates don't fully have a full throat support for legalization.
It's more generational. If you get above 75 years old, 40%, only 40% support it, but 60% of folks under the age of 75 support legalizing it. So you have to see, as time goes on, similar to the gay marriage thing, it's going to happen. It's just a matter of how and when, or unless something incredible happens that totally makes legal marijuana dangerous or something like that, or some kind of scandal or something like that. It just seems like it's just a matter of time before it becomes available in all 50 states, whether it's 10 years, 15 years from now.
Yeah, and I think, you know, 2020 would sound like a good year for something like this. It's a presidential year. You're going to have a larger turnout, and usually larger turnout is going to favor a proposal like this. You know, we saw one of the reasons I think that issue 3 failed in 2015 is because it was a low turnout year. It was an off year. It was a municipal election turnout year, and you even had some, you know, people who support marijuana legalization being very vocal about their opposition to the specific plan. So, you know, I think the idea there was we get to pick our voters, but usually the political strategy on this is to go in a larger year. But again, they're getting a late start. I don't know, you know, what financial support they have, because even if they do qualify for the ballot, they're going to have to run some sort of an educational campaign, and there likely would be opposition to this. And it won't be cheap. In a presidential year, your ads cost a lot more. They're harder to get.
Yep. Got to wedge your way in there between all the Michael Bloomberg ads, you know?
Good luck.
Where does Michael Bloomberg stand on this? I don't even know. He was opposed to the big gulp, but I don't know where he stands on pot.
He recently, like within the last week or two, has softened his position.
I'm shocked to hear that. I'm shocked to hear he changed his opinion on something. Jackie Borchardt from the Cincinnati Inquirer talking to us about the latest recreational marijuana ballot initiative to get going. Jackie, thanks for coming in and joining Snollygoster.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Jackie. We'll be right back.
On All Sides with Ann Fisher, we cover the topics that affect life in Central Ohio, from immigration to the economy to the continuing opioid crisis.
But the reality is, if you don't save someone who's overdosed, they have no opportunity to recover.
Hear thoughtful, in-depth conversations about the issues that matter now. Subscribe to the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are a week into the primary election month here in Ohio, and we have some returns. No, we don't know who's winning, but we kind of know who's voting.
Yeah, we do. Here are the numbers that we have from the Secretary of State's office. We got those numbers this week from Frank LaRose. Ohioans have requested about 150,000 absentee or early ballots. 19,000 people have voted early, have returned those ballots already. As the real action is in the Democratic race, not surprisingly, Democrats have requested and cast more ballots at this point than Republicans.
Because voter enthusiasm is critical to Democrats looking to defeat President Trump this year, let's look at how the very early turnout compares to the last presidential primary in Ohio 4 years ago. It's pretty close. About the same number of people have requested absentee ballots. There is a number that's different. Nearly twice as many people voted early in the first week this year as did 4 years ago.
Now, whenever you compare elections, context is key. So let's put this in context. Remember, 4 years ago, the Democratic race only featured two candidates at this point. Hillary Clinton was the clear favorite, but Bernie Sanders had just won Michigan in a big upset. The Republican primary, of course, featured John Kasich, our favorite guy, John Kasich. So you figure that had to increase enthusiasm on the GOP side, at least a little bit. Trump was the clear front runner at this point.
Yeah. But Kasich
was still in the race. He won Ohio.
Yeah. So what does it mean for this year? Well, we don't know. we can't read too much into these numbers. It looks like early person voting is up. That might be a sign of Democratic enthusiasm, but it's still early. And one thing about these numbers is an equal number of Republicans and Democrats in the first week cast ballots. So you can't say that there are more Democrats casting early ballots than Republicans. It's about the same. So it looks like enthusiasm is roughly the same as it was in 2016.
I'll tell you what, you go up to my neck of the woods up in Richwood, you get the view from Richwood, as we like to say.
Yep.
Republican enthusiasm seems very high, at least for local elections. You go up here, you see signs for Dave Burke, for Rod Goddard, a lot of local races. There's yard signs everywhere.
They have primaries up there?
Yeah, there's a very busy primary in Union County.
So that could be boosting the numbers. Who knows? Maybe the weather was bad the first week in primary season back in 2016. I don't remember. So it's hard to tell, but basically I think that there is enthusiasm out there. Whether it's enough to carry Democrats to victory in the fall, it's way too early to tell. We do know that Ohio's primary likely will matter based on the early results, and Joe Biden's apparent strength in South Carolina. We'll know more on Saturday. And then Michael Bloomberg comes into the race on Super Tuesday. In all likelihood, Ohio's primary will matter.
We are hurt a little bit by California moving into the Super Tuesday conversation. There's so many delegates at stake in California that if someone were to have somewhat of a sweep on Super Tuesday, Ohio might not matter. Again, they very easily could, but it really depends what happens on Super Tuesday, and especially with California.
Yeah, I think if for some reason Joe Biden does not win South Carolina or loses badly in South Carolina and has to drop out, then Ohio it could be Bernie Sanders' race to lose at that point.
You think he drops out if he loses South Carolina, or at least depending on what you think it's a possibility?
I think he waits until after Super Tuesday. But if he loses South Carolina and does not do well on Super Tuesday, then yeah, his race is all but over.
Anyway, time now for our namesake award, the Snollygoster of the Week, honoring bold political shrewdness.
So, our question, what do you do when you're being investigated by the FBI for lavish travel with lobbyists while you're in office? Well, you kayak in Antarctica.
Duh.
You take scenic flights over Brazil. You visit England. And you post all of your travels on Instagram.
The only reason people travel these days is to put it on Instagram. Come on. That is at least how former Ohio House Speaker Cliff Rosenberger is doing it. Laura Bischoff, our friend from the Dayton Daily News, got the story. She reports Rosenberger has posted dozens of pictures of his travel to South America and Europe over the past 3 weeks.
We can't see these pictures now because the account became private.
Come on, Cliff.
Oddly enough, soon after Laura started asking questions about it, Rosenberger told her, as a private citizen, his personal life is not newsworthy.
A private citizen is a fudgy term there. Well, why do we care? Because it's kind of ironic here. He suddenly quits the speaker's job because of questions about his expensive travel as speaker, often with representatives of the payday lending industry. which at the time was trying to hang on to its business in Ohio.
We don't know how he can afford all these trips or the $330,000 house he bought 5 months after he left office. But, all right, okay, as far as the law is concerned, Cliff Rosenberger is innocent. He may be under investigation, but he's not been charged. There is no public evidence that he did anything illegal.
There's also a court of public opinion. So the regular course of action while you're under investigation during an FBI probe would be to take a low profile. Cliff Rosenberger will have none of that. Thank you, Cliff, for giving us this content this week. He appears to be living his best life. And so for that, Cliff Rosenberger, you are the Snollygoster of the week.
Hands down. There's no question this week. That'll do it for this week. Snollygoster, if you like us, give us a good review on iTunes. Tell your friends about us. Spread the word. We want to give credit to our intern, Jack Long, and our sound engineer extraordinaire, Eric French. I'm Mike Thompson.
And I'm Steve Brown for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.